Our third speaker.
Thank you.
Kay Alexander. Who taught a class about the Grateful Dead at Duke's Music Department three different times. This is the fifth time that she's presenting in Albuquerque, this time in Religious Studies. She's presented Pedagogy, Women's Studies, American Studies, and Art History before. And her paper is Some Rise, Some Fall, Towards an Epistemology of Therapy.
We gather from evidence and experience, but we also gather from coincidence. And the coincidences that brought me to this project started in late 1996. I was working for a science and technical publishing house in Beijing. They were sending me English translations of articles to make comprehensible, and it was extremely hard work. One of them was an epistemology of hyperspectral imaging. And what this woman did was simply create a basic list of terms to talk about taking photographs from space. And I thought, that looks like fun. I would love to create something like that. And then a few months later, I was here, and a chance exchange between two people in a session made me realize that I now had a subject for the epistemology. And this was the exchange, very simple. One person mentioned, I think in the context of a Q&A at the end of a panel, the magic that had flowed through the band to her from the stage on a particular night. And someone else immediately raised their hand and said, you know, I have had that feeling, but I always thought that the magic was something that came from inside me. And I thought, that's so interesting, because they're describing something that makes them feel similarly, but they're attributing opposite points of origin to it. And so even though they feel these similarities very deeply, their definitions of what they're talking about might be very different. And one of the people, the one who was feeling the thing flowing through to her, was describing what I would call a conventionally theistic experience, where the divine comes to you somehow. And the other person was talking about what could be described as a conventionally atheistic experience, where the world does contain this sort of magic, but it's something that we generate from inside ourselves. And I thought, wouldn't it be nice if there was an inclusive language for Terrapin, that is to say, the culture of the Grateful Dead and the Deadheads, an inclusive language that wouldn't privilege one form of experience over the other, a value-neutral epistemology, so that people could talk about these very deep, meaningful, integrative experiences that they have without necessarily saying that they are religious or non-religious. So I've just spent a year thinking about this. And in the course of trying to figure it out, I've gone everywhere. It's been a romp. I've looked at song lyrics and comparing people's reports of what happens at Grateful Dead shows or consuming Grateful Dead music in other venues to conventionally religious experiences and philosophies. It's been a great. Thinking about theory may be a romp. Writing theory is like stirring a bucket of clay with a chopstick. So I ended up with 35 single-spaced pages, and I'm not going to read it. I'm just going to summarize what's been going on. Basically, religion as we think of it and rock music are always going to be at odds. Religion has a regulatory aspect, whether or not it posits a divine creator and human beings who have to live according to laws that divine creator has established, or which would be a monotheistic experience, or a polytheistic experience where salvation and enlightenment and knowledge are not necessarily connected to a creator or to human relationships with a creator. Any way you look at it, you're talking about a regulated set of relationships. Rock, imposing order onto chaos, essentially. And rock and roll is the opposite. Rock and roll injects chaos into order. And even though many religious systems have tried to make peace with that, I mean, there's Christian rock, there's reggae, which started as an entirely religious form of popular music. It's an uneasy alliance. And even in spite of the uneasiness of this alliance, people find genuinely meaningful experiences in the course of producing and consuming rock music. That's whether they're playing it, hearing it, thinking about it, traveling to go see it, on and on and on. So I thought that even though religion likes to think of itself as kind of a higher chakra integrative brain and body thing, and rock and roll takes more of the devil's route to get to the same place, that there must be commonalities. And I thought about this, as I say, for a year, and I sorted the commonalities that I found into five categories, and this is the epistemology. These are the five general categories. We have cosmology, movement, text, practice, and perpetuation. And what I did was look at Terrapin in the light of all these things. I compared Terrapin to the religious and cultural system, the civilization of Judaism, partly to address a lack of previous lack of scholarship that's addressed that, and also because most of the scholarship that I've read that looks at Terrapin in a religious sense, if they mention Judeo-Christian aspects of it, they only interpret them in Christian terms. So I wanted to address that imbalance a little bit as well. And last, I decided that it would be really necessary after some of the things I heard here last year and some of the things I've read online this year to evaluate the potential of Terrapin to become a religion in its own right. And that is separate from the cults that have developed within it, like the Spinners, or the infusion of Grateful Dead hippiness into things like the Shlomo Karabakh kibbutz in Israel, what have you. I'm talking about actual religious hierarchies coming out of the Grateful Dead culture. Okay, so we'll start with cosmology. And I will possibly read a few sentences out of here. Cosmology is a viable entity, simultaneously contained and boundless, in which the ineffable and the material are manifested. It means the universe itself and how it operates. So it's the framework and everything in the framework. Religion seeks to explicate the universe in terms of beings, mortal and immortal, animate and inanimate, and to arbitrarily assess their ways of existence. Religious cosmologies are organized along decisively hierarchical continuums, whether they originated as theistic religions or atheistic creeds. Terrapin can be described as a cosmology. That is, within the totality of the Grateful Dead experience, there are beings who act and interact, whose actions have particular qualities and consequences. Terrapin also overlaps and is in symbiotic relationship with other cosmologies, and that overlapping is where I'm going to put all of the external stimulants that people took to have integrative experiences of Grateful Dead shows. I'm not going to be talking about drugs as a sacrament in here, except to mention that the openness to changing consciousness and to rendering ourselves more capable of having these experiences does have some resonance in Judaism. The very first blessing I learned was the blessing over the wine. So, I mean, this is part of Jewish culture way, way back, and as I think has already been written about, is one reason that Jewish deadheads are the biggest druggies in our culture. As a cosmology, Terrapin contains occurrences such as celebration and loss, conditions such as kindness and injustice, and emotions such as joy and impatience, not only because these are inherent to existence as human beings know it, but because conditions particular to Terrapin causes beings who inhabit it to experience them in particular ways. And while religious hierarchies of experience are not as hotly contested because religion tends to see things in terms of dualities, in Terrapin, the hierarchies are hotly contested, but they still exist. Shows range from great to awful. Tapes range from pristine to unlistenable, and so forth and so on. And then we get a little deeper into particular concepts that exist in the cosmology of Terrapin. For example, sacredness, which is similarly prized by us and in religious cosmologies. Certain times, spaces, traditions, objects are precious, inherently deserving of respect and protection. Judaism is, as I said, traditional religion often sees this conflict as threatening. because the devil's music cannot be religious. Judaism is not quite as threatened by this because the central dualities in our civilization are described empirically. We have justice versus injustice, or peace versus conflict, rather than figuratively described as good versus evil. So it's not quite as threatening to Judaism. Because the cosmologies of the world's great faiths are also much older than Terrapin, which is not even 60 years old yet, much about them cannot be usefully compared. But we do know that today, Terrapin's cosmology differs from explicitly religious cosmologies in key ways. First, the most fundamental construction of Terrapin is not hierarchical, but codependent and mercantile. Deadheads consume music made by the band, which would not have made music without an audience to consume it. Here there is a parallel, however faint, with the birth of Judaism. The Divine One gave us the Torah at Mount Sinai because we were there to receive it and because we agreed to accept it. Second, because the term hierarchy has pejorative connotations within Terrapin, whenever possible, its organizational structures are self-defined and self-regulated and are coordinated pragmatically and cooperatively, even for individuals. Longevity of membership, intensity of attachment, depth of involvement may not be predictive of status. And again, there is some resemblance to Judaism because minhag, which is local tradition, and national tradition coexist peacefully. Third, personal characteristics not ordinarily associated with traditionally religious life, such as individuation, independence, and adventurousness, are almost pervasively emphasized in Terrapin, while characteristics generally assumed to be religious, such as holiness, purity, self-denial, and submission, are not. Although no direct parallel with Judaism is found here, it's interesting to note that Judaism does not regard these two sets of characteristics as fundamentally opposed. Fourth, while access to the integrative, transformative experiences prized in Terrapin are variously mediated, the contents of these experiences are unrestricted, and this may be Terrapin's deepest resonance with Judaism. Fifth, no non-human source of redemption, enlightenment, or salvation is communally acknowledged by deadheads as divine, a ruler over Terrapin, or an architect of its destiny, and no such entity must be worshipped as a condition of membership. Sixth, and most obviously, the linking of death and gratitude in Terrapin's governing metaphor is presented with deliberate, exceptional ambiguity and demonstrated with unique variety. This comes and goes with Judaism. Judaism, as Confucianism, posits that the dead do not praise God, that it's not really to our advantage to spend any time thinking in a lot of detail about the afterlife. The important thing is to focus on the life that we have now. In general, the problem of evil is also handled differently within Terrapin. Some religious cosmologies are largely sustained by the notion that evil can and should be eradicated. The latter's impossibility has forced them to incorporate varying levels of realism. Others philosophize balance between evil and good. Like these, Terrapin clearly denounces evil, but is generally more concerned with preventing and enduring it. In these ways, Terrapin does resemble Judaism. Then I get into another aspect of religious cosmology, which is time. The way time is handled by religions and the social groups that religions characterize says a lot about them. If there's no move to cope with the changes that time brings, you stagnate in orthodoxy, becoming regressive. And of course, the prime example of in the world today is the Taliban, who has, not coincidentally, sought to ban all forms of music other than the chant of prayer.
Well, they did.
In Afghanistan, yeah. So they're on to having to make this break. But by contrast, the immense variety of Judaism's approaches, which range from ultra-orthodoxy to secular humanism, obviate absolute conclusions about its comfort level with modernity. Judaism, and I get into this later on as well, is implicitly poised to cope with the passage of time. We have a progressive creation narrative, and the expulsion from the original state of total leisure and comfort and support in the Jewish tradition is not taught as a punishment. The original Hebrew word, which I wrote down somewhere here, for the expulsion, where the quote is, In X you shall bring forth children, which King James Version translated as pain or sorrow. In Hebrew is etzavech, your labor. The noun is etzavon. So all it means is that everything's not going to be given to you now. That knowledge, you've eaten from the fruit of the tree of knowledge, so now you have responsibility in the world. It's not a punishment to have knowledge. It's a great thing to have knowledge. So Terrapin has not been threatened by time. Time and progress have enabled Terrapin to exist. Instead, these elements have enabled Terrapin to rapidly assemble a canon, grow a highly developed complex culture around it, contrary to the usual process in which culture precedes canon. Although Judaism's development as a civilization that sprang from a religion has, of course, been different than Terrapin's as a culture formed around a rock band, both are eager to successfully cope with and participate in the changes and challenges time brings. I'll come back to that later. Then the next section is movement. Movement is bodily motions, that's overtly physical ones, such as sitting, standing, and swaying, subtle ones such as controlled breathing, larger spatial displacements such as traveling, that are common to religion and rock. Because all religious systems incorporate some form of music, singing, dancing, and instrument playing are common to both. Movement also refers in this system to ephemeral transformations, which are experienced in both religion and rock as shifts in consciousness or mood or affinity or viewpoint, so forth and so on. This is hugely similar between Judaism and Terrapin. Their adaptability enables both to relocate as needed, albeit their reasons for developing this ability are very different. Also because migration is essential to the history and experience of both, they contain voluntarily nomadic aspects, as a travel according to a calendar of extraordinary times and events. These deliberate journeys by deadheads and Jews with the similar goals of experiencing something deeply necessary that may not be patently religious are forms of pilgrimage. However, the more general nomadism of both may be negative and involuntary for all kinds of reasons. Movement within both Terrapin and Judaism may be minimal, as with the growing number of deadheads whose participation in Terrapin is mostly online, and unaffiliated Jews who vaguely identify but who expend no effort to learn or participate. Or it may involve traversing long distances to meet others, to attend an event, where the range of movement may extend from contemplative to ecstatic. Ritual gestures and postures are also important within both Terrapin and Judaism. In fact, the movement of deadheads in their seats, if they don't have room to dance, has reminded more than one person of davening, of the way Absolutely. Jews move in prayer. And every Jew that I've talked to about this says that they've noticed it and actually makes the show environment a lot more comfortable for them. Okay, where do we go from here? As an altruistic but authoritarian exercise, religion is crucially concerned with preparing human beings for a good life, afterlife, or cycle of lives. So those are proactive and prescriptively exhorting improvement in its adherents and in the world at large. Okay, that's, again, ephemeral movement. However, because religion's notion of progress is equated with achieving hegemony, its approval is largely opportunistic. In other words, religion, depending on its level of orthodoxy, encourages people to engage in ephemeral movement, but within strict limits and only in the service of its own agendas. This is somewhat less so for Judaism, which also recognizes the conflicts that arises from these paradoxical conditions and is less apt to suppress them. Rock, by contrast, is a secular art form that can incorporate any number or kind of ideals and causes. It's also a commercial undertaking, centrally concerned with entertainment, and as such is primarily reactive and descriptive. Although rock can be homiletic and is usually encouraging of transformative states, its inherent anti-authoritarianism usually causes it to promote ephemeral movement either for its own sake or as a form of resistance, catharsis, or pleasure. In these ways, Judaism and rock have little in common, aside from Judaism's arduous inculcation of ephemeral movement for its own sake. Both of these systems treat ephemeral movement in ways that are more indicative of fully developed civilizations than a singular religion or a rock band and its fans. Both encourage thought and reflection, affirm a multiplicity of opinion, admire members who are flexible, and reward members who mature. In addition, the absence of a central governing authority in both protects members from total expulsion. if the results of their ephemeral motions are transgressive. For example, a Jew who ceases to believe in God is still a Jew. Similarly, a deadhead remains a deadhead, even if he decides that he loathes every note the band played after 1974. In addition, both Terrapin and Judaism explicitly link physical and ephemeral movement, and I get back to that later. Okay, next section, text. And this is where the train really leaves the station. Text refers to semiotic devices which comprise communication. They denote information. They don't necessarily stimulate or require a response. Text also refers to the meaning that is signified or broadcast by such devices. Combinations of texts and the situations that result are known as contexts, whether the subject at hand is a message's form, meaning, the medium by which it is transmitted, or the relations among these. Inconspicuous linked texts are called contexts. Broadly classified as sign and symbol, texts present an array of forms, including material, gestural, kinetic, oral, narrative, including spoken and written, and visual, including graphic. These can be planned or spontaneous, structured or improvised, overt or subliminal, obvious or coded, concrete or extrasensory. They can also be displayed and perceived consciously or unconsciously. Appearance markers are also a set of texts. As the means by which content is disseminated, it is through texts that both religion and rock promulgate and are understood. Within Terrapin, as we know, texts display an astonishing degree of confluence. Songs, for example, which are generally agreed to be Terrapin's primary texts, are actually combinations of numerous other texts. In addition to the meaning inferred from a song's melody, lyric, arrangement, instrumentation, performance, each of which is routinely subdivided, deadheads may evaluate a song according to its frequency, familiarity, placement, and history, both within and preceding Terrapin. Meaning can also be inferred from a song through personal experience markers, personal appearance markers, such as the band's body language while performing it, objects and accessories used by deadheads that reference it. In addition, exactly as with other cosmologies, Terrapin's texts as generated may differ remarkably both from how they are received and what is inferred. All of this combines and recombines into a plethora of contexts that signal both the nature and history of Terrapin. To take just one example, let's consider a show tape. In and of itself, a show tape is a concrete material text that contains numerous other texts. These include songs, which in turn contain the textual contributions of two or more songwriters and at least five musicians, plus the sound crew, possibly a word or two from the band in between songs, and audience reaction, which is yet another combined text that contains innumerable meanings and indicators of context. Then there are markers specific to the tape, such as the sound quality, the decoration, on and on and on. Very similarly to Jews, whose culture both necessitates and glorifies the pursuit of knowledge, deadheads thrive on deciphering, interpreting, and ordering this glut of information, and do so with remarkable ease and rapidity, sometimes needing only to read the songs listed on the tape cover to know when the show was played, whether it was considered good or bad, whether it was cowboy or jammy, and so forth, whether it contains anomalous or unique aspects like a breakout song, or it was played at a rarely visited venue, while listening to the tape, even if unaware of any of the above information. Deadhead's guesses about when and where the show happened can also be remarkably astute. For example, wow, that's an insane roar behind that Touch of Grey opener. Which comeback show was this? I mean, I've actually heard people say that. Still more details, such as where the break falls and if music was lost during the flip, help deadheads qualify tapes. Deadheads can also infer show information by reading the visual texts preserved in photographs and videos, so forth and so on. Okay, the primacy of text of within Terrapin, its multi-directional flow, the myriad forms it assumes, the attentions these receive, closely resembles the role of text within spiritual and religious systems. However, the freedom with which deadheads interpret and reinterpret received texts, as well as create and produce texts, are not analogous. Also, as Hunter so eloquently sums up in Scarlet Begonias, deadheads display a marked tendency to extract meaning from text units as minute as a single word or note, as Jews also do, and to accordingly redefine larger contexts right away, which Jews do not. The ephemeral quality of these pursuits was introduced in movement, but they go on and on through practice and perpetuation. If one experience could be said to be cherished above all others by deadheads, it would be ephemeral expansion through consuming Grateful Dead music. In other words, the integrative states deadheads attain when the production and perceptions of Terrapin's texts are compatible. Consequently, in slightly more than a half century, Terrapin has produced and consumed an astonishing amount and variety of texts. The preponderance of pastiche, self-referentiality, pranksterism, embellishment, complexity, ambiguity, and meta-narrative in these texts locates them as postmodern, and therefore identify Terrapin as a postmodern phenomenon. Not surprising, as Terrapin came into being precisely at the epoch between modernism and the global era. Fortunately, Terrapin is prevented from the postmodern pitfall, described by Featherstone as a tendency towards cultural disorder, by many of its previously discussed characteristics, but particularly by the primacy and centrality it accords to text. As Judaism learned long ago, textual diversity can not only exist within a stable cultural order, the sanction and celebration of such diversity can be a culture's greatest strength. In addition, neither Judaism nor Terrapin mandate the supremacy of any particular experience. Of course, the texts of established religions far outnumber Terrapin's and may have had hundreds or even thousands of years to accumulate meaning and significance. Here, Terrapin's relative youth and the timing of its birth at the dawn of the computer age seem to be advantageous. A greater proportion of our texts remain in current use, and it is beyond question that more of Terrapin's texts are still available and accessible. Although the accelerated pace of Terrapin's development causes its texts to lose relevance quickly, for example, show tapes have given way to CDs, deadheads cherish and even revel in their renewal and revival, and I'm thinking here about the songs that get brought back or songs that get rearranged. These attitudes closely parallel Judaism's approach to cultural portability and preservation. Terrapin signals its anticipation and acceptance of its own rapid evolution by emphasizing textual improvisation and incorporating eclectic influences. These are also tendencies endemic to Judaism, starting, as I mentioned, with its progressive creation narrative and description of its first act of human agency. In other words, the ability and also the need to cope, adapt, change, and grow are hardwired into the texts and life of both Judaism and Terrapin, which both acknowledge and both draw upon the entirety of their own histories. Because the Jewish religion is messianic, and Jewish culture has long-term location and survival issues, Jewish texts often follow the modernist tendency of ascribing only positive qualities to progress, even if what's being written about is nostalgic in the sense of, oh, we had more faith then, we were on a better path then. I mean, look at something like Fiddler on the Roof. There's no way that anybody could write romantically about the shtetl experience unless they were separated from it and romanticizing something about it. By contrast, Grateful Dead music often functions as a dismantling agent of modernism. This potential has been enhanced by the band's choice of material, I would have to say particularly Bob Dylan songs, and by its songwriters, especially Robert Hunter, who restored a bardic presence to the modernist meta-narratives generally found in rock by combining psychedelic poetry with tropes associated with the folk tradition. These techniques and the reasons for their implementation resonate deeply with Jewish literature, which has always juxtaposed the mystical with daily realities. And then I talk a little bit about Hunter and Barlow making their agreement to obfuscate the meaning of their songs so that they could not become explicitly religious texts. Using 2 minutes? Oh, shit. Well, very fast. Doing more of the romp. I go through a lot of individual songs and the way they reveal the deeply layered Jewish roots of modern American culture. Lots of examples in there that will be written up at some point in detail. I gotta skip on to practice, which are the actions and activities that happen within a cosmology. Text can be used as tools. Deadheads use stickers and the dead bass. They can be verbal as with the songs. They can be oral, listening to songs, traveling, moving around. Text as instructive, which Grateful Dead text is not. There's no single text that we have yet that tells you how to be a deadhead We don't really know how to be deadheads. We're making it up as we go along. So again, there's a resonance with Judaism, the question of what is a deadhead and what is a Jew. Very live questions. Another essential element of practice is the simulacrum, because we don't have the show experience anymore. There's non-show time. We have post-show era, where we're trying to figure out how to preserve this core experience of our culture. I think that a lot of similarities to Judaism, because of the experience of Shabbat, in which paradise can be recreated. We can only experience this by making it for ourselves once a week. I also think that the sound of the band is a simulacrum of a stable universe, where you have the rhythm of the drums, you have the kind of a grounding of the bass, you have the irregularities of the rhythm guitar, which of course were made into symbols of a godly and a ungodly things in the world by the Spinners, and then on top of all of that, Jerry Garcia's guitar. There's a lot of unity of all of this, and all of this in the practices of the depth zone, where movement and interpretation and text are all have a confluence. So this is all about religious and literary traditions in the service of art, which is a part of what postmodernism talks about, erasing those boundaries. What Phil Lesh said to Hank Harrison in 1965, he wanted his life to be the work. It's also been said by the Dead most concisely in their kiss-off letter that they wrote to all of us after the riots in 1995. We're a rock band, you have to buy a ticket, you have to behave, but also we're about higher consciousness, why aren't you people acting that way? And I think the most eloquent defender of keeping those things separate has been Bob Dylan, who has not wanted to be a prophet, who's described himself as a song and dance man, etc. Last, we have perpetuation, which is how the cosmology keeps itself going, and also how and why it's attractive to members, and how it draws new members into it. These things are inherently pleasurable and useful. They're fun. And as Kent brought up, I think that all of this comes into one point, a point of recognition, a point where we recognize a song, the point where we recognize that they're coming back into the Dark Star, the point where we recognize that it's the plan that they started 3 days ago, the point where we recognize there's another deadhead in the room that we're looking at, the point that we recognize something about ourselves. This is ephemeral motion. That's how the culture keeps itself going. There's a redemptive aspect to all of this, where community building is also a transgressive act. So we can get our jollies out by being a revolutionary kind of community. And for Jews, I think the way death is described and handled in Terrapin is one of the most important perpetuation signals, because of the denial that the Jewish community is still largely in about processing the annihilation of the 1940s, the Shoah, which was not only a violation of our national body in terms of dead Jewish bodies being referred to as rags and piled up and burned that way, but because we couldn't take care of dead bodies the way we have done for thousands of years, by washing them, sitting up with them, comforting the mourners. It was a total disruption. And so what's happened after that, I think, psychologically, is this tremendous fear, where the angel of death, who was a redemptive figure before, like we say at the end of the Passover Seder in Chag Gadyah, where the angel of death comes and completes this chain, and then God is the one who is the only one who can rule over the angel of death. This has turned into a barrier that we're psychologically unable to cross, because there's no control, there's no tradition, it's just this horrible void that you're thrown into. And then here comes Terrapin, where something is smiling back at you from the other side of the void and saying, you know, you actually do have some control over how you cross this boundary and how you feel about it afterwards. That's an extremely healing and redemptive image for a civilization that's, you know, still coping with a third of the people in it being murdered 50, 60 years ago. So the last thing that I want to say about perpetuation is that it has a glocalizing aspect, which is to say the spread of Grateful Dead culture is now worldwide. There's deadheads in Japan and Bali and all over the place. And they're taking this thing that came to them from somewhere else, like the town in The Music Never Stopped, and they're turning it to their own purposes. They're taking the global thing and making it local for them. That's a glocalization process. And so in the future, if Terrapin becomes a religion, I think that's going to be the one of the reasons that it survives whatever comes past the global era. I don't think Terrapin is going to become a religion in the global era. There's already religion for people to have. And because people have religious experiences within a particular cosmology, doesn't make it a religious cosmology. But the post-global era may very well be an apocalyptic era. And if we go back to some approximation of Bronze Age conditions, our texts are largely lost because there's no electricity, we can't get into our computers anymore, our books have been burned, the transmission has been disrupted so much that the original texts can no longer be transmitted, and the people who remember, who know the songs, who may have had a relative or a friend or an ancestor who experienced this personally, they're going to be free to reinterpret it however they want. So there's deconstruction and reconstruction at the same time. That, I think, is when Terrapin has the potential to become a religion. Rock and roll and religion will be so divorced from the contexts that we know them through as an experience of modernism that we're experiencing because we are alive in this area, in this era, that the intrusion of hierarchy and gatekeepers into Terrapin could actually happen. You could have people killing in Jerry's name. You could have somebody saying, well, I'm not going to let you listen to this Dark Star because you don't think it means what it really means. I mean, those are unthinkable things right now. After the Big Bang, they might not be so unthinkable anymore. It's possible. And the last, like that, I wanted a summary symbol of all of this. In the end, there's just a song. If the core text is a single note, the core moment of recognition for us is the essence of the transformative experience. This comes down. In Judaism, we would recognize, we would symbolize the outer core as a yod, the first letter of the Tetragrammaton. Yod translates to J in English. So everything up here that's coming down to us gets focused onto us in this one way. Of course, if you transpose these things, you have the star. And it's in this space that Terrapin happens. This is where Terrapin is located. Between what's coming down to us and what we are sending up, that's where the creature lives. That's where the magic happens. So I symbolize that as an aleph, which in Hebrew is the letter that stands for that generative process, the beginning of all knowledge and all experience. Yud Aleph in Hebrew is the number 11. This is our 11th year at PCA. So I put the years on, and I have these stickers on order. And so, but they didn't arrive in time to bring here, I'm sorry. And there's also a wonderful color aspect you can do with this, where if you have the top triangle is blue and the bottom triangle is red, then you have purple in the middle, yada yada. So I ordered a couple of different color combinations. Awesome. And
it's like the X factor too.
Yeah, that's right. This is a little X-y, isn't it? Yeah. So I hope to get this all written up properly, and I hope that it made sense, even though I had to kind of really rush through it. And thank you for listening.